The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Greetings, everyone. I'm Jennifer Green for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Teen Magazines. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from theteenmagazine.com and teenvogue.com. Our first article today from teenvogue.com, Students Fighting Book Bans Are the Focus of the New Documentary Band Together. This article was written by Elizabeth Foster on April 16th. Just 4 days after Donald Trump took office earlier this year, his Department of Education, may it rest in peace, released a statement declaring book bans a hoax. As someone who spent countless hours in school board meetings to fight book banning attempts in my own district, I wish this claim had even an ounce of truth in it. The new documentary film, Band Together, available on Apple TV Plus and Amazon Prime Video, debunks the Trump administration's blatant lie that Americans are safe from book bans. The documentary follows my efforts to preserve intellectual freedom in Beaufort, South Carolina, alongside student activists Isabella Izzy Troy Brezeban and Millie Bennett. My personal experience in combating censorship started in 2022 when complaints from two community members resulted in the removal of 97 books from every school in the Beaufort County School District, BSCD. Izzy, Millie, and I attended three different schools when the books were taken, but we each found our way to school board meetings that winter. The three of us, along with several other students who understood and appreciated the value of access to diverse literature, began meeting weekly to research and draft public comments that showcased the endless variety of arguments for keeping the government out of school libraries. Every other Tuesday, we stood before the board in a strategic, predetermined order to maximize the impact of that evening's comments. I reviewed the history of public education as a pillar of functioning democracy and documented historical instances of book banning to demonstrate the anti-democratic nature of censorship. Millie spoke to the importance of queer representation in literature for LGBTQ+ students who often lack resources and support in small conservative communities like Beaufort. Izzy shared her own experiences with racism and familial substance abuse to show that trying to protect students by taking away books with dark storylines is ineffective and even dangerous for the significant portion of kids who have already experienced similar hardships in their own lives. Slowly but surely, the BCSD board voted to comply with recommendations from community-led review committees, returning a few books at a time over the course of the year. In the end, 91 of the 97 books were returned to our schools. The school board's hopeful voting record was a major win for Beaufort County, but the story has ended differently for so many other school districts in South Carolina and across the country. PEN America has documented nearly 16,000 book bans in public schools nationwide since 2021, a number that is rising alarmingly quickly with each passing school year. When Atomic Focus Entertainment, the production company behind Band Together, approached Millie, Izzy, and me about filming a documentary to capture our community's response to censorship efforts, the story quickly and necessarily morphed. What started as local activism for Izzy, Millie, and me became a national undertaking when the three of us had the opportunity to meet and interview scholars, politicians, and authors about the United States' dramatic rise in censorship. Harvard University Law Professor Justin Hansford explained to us that the First Amendment not only protects Americans' right to express ideas, but to receive information as well, meaning the removal of access to specific novels directly violates the Constitution. PEN America's Jonathan Friedman illustrated how book banning has opened the door to classroom censorship, discouraging educators from teaching the most up-to-date and accurate curricula. Best-selling author Jodi Picou indicated that the real motivation behind banning books is a fear that kids will wind up thinking differently than their parents on a whole host of issues. Over and over, everyone we talked to reaffirmed one central message. The book banning movement is about something so much bigger than books. The same movement started by attacking critical race theory as a proxy for targeting black and brown students. Queer and transgender students, like my own brother, were added to the list of demonized identities as far-right extremists came after their stories in schools and libraries. And now, the Trump administration is coming after higher education by utilizing unconstitutional fear tactics to dismantle DEI programs and deport international students who challenge its policy positions. Representative Jamie Raskin, Democrat, Maryland, reminded us that censorship is a core function of fascism, as seen by the book burning carried out in Nazi Germany. Cutting off access to ideas that threaten a singular, narrow perspective of the American experience is inherently undemocratic, in addition to being harmful to students with marginalized identities. Raskin's frank analysis is a good reminder that book banners have never been on the right side of history. Needless to say, my last year of high school certainly would have been a lot less stressful if book bans were indeed a mere hoax. But unfortunately, instances of censorship are happening all over America as part of a larger agenda to silence diverse voices, rewrite history, and suppress the critical thinking that is the hallmark of an informed electorate. As students, we cannot sit idly until our favorite book is taken from our classrooms, or our coolest teacher is harassed into leaving her profession. Consider the words of Lutheran pastor Martin Niemöller, spoken in Germany following the Holocaust. "First, they came for the socialists, and I did not speak out, because I was not a socialist. Then they came for the trade unionists, and I did not speak out, because I was not a trade unionist. Then they came for the Jews, and I did not speak out, because I was not a Jew. Then they came for me, and there was no one left to speak for me." When right-wing extremists come after public education and First Amendment rights, they are coming after you. They are coming after your ability to consume information, to read books that speak to your identity, to develop empathy for your peers, to think critically about the world around you. If you're wondering what you can do, watching Band Together is a great first step. You'll learn more about the context surrounding book bans and censorship, and see how students and communities alike have fought back against these harmful policies. Hopefully, the film will leave you feeling inspired, optimistic, and ready to take action. After all, we have the joy of learning, literature, diversity, and inclusivity on our side. And in the words of This Book Is Gay author Juno Dawson, who doesn't love joy? Our next article From the teenmagazine.com. What failing my exam taught me about balancing my life. This article was written by Sudarsini Jayaprakash on April 20th. 58. 58. That was all my brain could think of. Not the countless nights I sacrificed my sleep, but my midterm exam score. What was wrong with me? I studied for hours before the test. I sat there, crying under my hoodie, while my friends celebrated their 90s. This is impossible. I've never gotten anything below an 85 on my exams. This is impossible. Those are the exact words I said when I saw I got a 58 on my AP World History midterm exam. I could sit there and tell you how hard the test was, or say, well, the class average was a 53. But that wouldn't change the fact that it was all on me. The mask I wore, pretending everything was fine, had a huge crack. Underneath, I was struggling. Deep inside, I was just a 15-year-old girl trying to be perfect, following random TikTok advice, wanting to be loved by everyone, and wanting to be the smartest person in my class. Balancing my life felt like the hardest thing ever. After that day, I realized I wasn't just stressed. I was someone who just wanted to fit in. I thought if I could just fake it till I make it, and pretend I could handle everything, then my life would get easier. If I just kept getting good grades, always showed up for my friends, looked put together, and stayed positive, then I'd feel good enough. But the truth is, a lot of teens go through this. It's not just a phase. It's something that needs more attention. I'm not going to sit here and give you advice like, just manage your time, or just make a schedule. Let's be real. What does that even mean? Managing your time isn't just about following a schedule. It's about making choices. It's knowing when to say no, even if you really want to say yes. It's choosing what you need over what you want. Sometimes it means picking sleep over studying. Before my AP exam, my choice was between studying and sleeping. I wanted to keep studying because I thought the more I studied, the better I would do. But honestly, what I needed was sleep. My brain was tired and my body was exhausted, but I ignored that because I thought pushing myself was the right thing. Maybe if I had chosen sleep, I would have been more rested and focused, and maybe I would have done better. I didn't realize that taking care of myself could actually help more than just cramming more info into my head. Other times, it means taking a break after a long day, whether hanging out with friends or just chilling by myself. Time management and balance are hard to get right. We're all just trying to figure it out. But when it comes to making decisions, you have to pick what's best for you in that moment. So, how does all this connect to my AP exam? The night before, I spent hours talking about drama at school and stuff that wasn't going to help me pass my exam. I should have set some boundaries, but I didn't, and I still regret it. But what I learned from that is that it's okay not to be perfect. It's okay to make mistakes. Sometimes those mistakes teach you more than anything else could. Trying to live up to other people's expectations just makes you feel exhausted. You need to focus on what matters to you. I used to think I had to impress everyone, but now I know I don't. I realized that my worth isn't based on my test scores or what other people think of me. Life is short, and we shouldn't spend it stressing over things that don't really matter. It's time to start living for yourself, not trying to meet everyone else's expectations. In a world with billions of people, and maybe even other life out there, what really matters? Living up to other people's expectations, or just being yourself? Focusing on who you are, what you want, and the people you surround yourself with is how you balance your life without losing who you are. My mask is gone now. I went from wearing a mask, pretending to be someone I wasn't, to being someone I'm proud of and comfortable being. I used to think that failing that test meant I failed as a person. But now I see it in a different way. That 58 actually taught me a lot, not just about school, but also about myself. It helped me realize what I needed to change and what really matters. And honestly, even though it made me cry, I'm kind of glad it happened. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com. Do aliens exist? New evidence suggests the answer is yes. This article was written by Anya Dow on April 21st. Aliens. We read about them in novels, and we watch them on fictional TV shows, but we've never actually encountered extraterrestrial life. Given the size of the universe, it's highly improbable aliens don't exist. But also given the size of the universe, it's highly improbable we'd find them anywhere close to Earth. Nonetheless, according to the BBC, scientists have found evidence that life could exist on another planet. Launched in 2021, the James Webb Space Telescope, JWST, is incredibly powerful, having reshaped the way we view the early stages of the universe and our knowledge of space. In this particular case, its ability to measure the physical and chemical properties of planets has been key. According to the BBC, the Cambridge group has found that the atmosphere seems to contain the chemical signature of at least one of two molecules that are associated with life, dimethyl sulfide, DMS, and dimethyl disulfide, DMDS. To break this down, when light passes through a planet's atmosphere, molecules absorb specific wavelengths of this light. Scientists can use techniques like spectroscopy to figure out which wavelengths are being absorbed. That's what the chemical signature / fingerprint is, which helps to determine which molecules are present. In this case, they think molecules, or gases, are dimethyl sulfide, DMS, and dimethyl disulfide, DMDS. And why is this important? On Earth, DMS and DMDS are produced by different forms of microbial life. Obviously, when we hear aliens, we immediately think of what we've seen in movies, intelligent forms of life, not bacteria. But these findings are promising, and given the amount of gas allegedly in its atmosphere, the planet could be full of life. In fact, on Earth, concentrations of these gases are around 1 part per billion in volume. On K12-18b, these figures seem they could be thousands of times higher. The planet on which these molecules were detected is called K2-18b. It's 124 light years away. That's 1.7 quadrillion kilometers, and 3 billion times farther away than the moon. The planet certainly isn't close, But if we think in terms of the size of the universe, which is infinite, it's not too far away either. It's still part of the same galaxy. Some researchers who made these findings also recently made observations which suggest carbon dioxide and methane may be present in K2-18b's atmosphere. The planet's mass is around 8.6 times that of Earth's, and it is 2.6 times larger. However, as with any scientific observation, there is a lot of work that goes into figuring out whether or not this detection can actually be validated as a discovery. Scientists first need to make sure their readings are definitely correct. They're about 99.7% sure at the moment, which seems very promising. But they'll need to be even more certain before we can confirm these findings. Then there's the issue of where the gases are coming from. On Earth, they are produced by forms of life. But when it comes to space, there's a lot we don't know. There could be something else producing the gases, some kind of chemical process. Some scientists feel as though we should be more tentative when approaching this situation. Because there's so much we don't know, they feel like we shouldn't jump in head first and assume we've completed our search for extraterrestrial life. Instead, we should be cautious and wait until once we've had more time to explore that planet and have collected more data, which should hopefully be possible with the JWST. Scientists have already been theorizing about how life might look on this foreign planet. Some believe it has a vast ocean. This is partly due to the fact that ammonia has not yet been detected in its atmosphere, so it could have been absorbed by water. Others suggest the surface is covered in molten rock, making life impossible. There remains much debate surrounding the subject. Overall, this is an exciting discovery, but the search for life on other planets is far from over. This information is all very recent, so nothing is certain. Whether or not K2-18b actually contains alien life is yet to be confirmed. But scientists are definitely making progress and collecting evidence to keep us informed. For now, we'll just have to wait and see. Our next article from theteenmagazine.com. How the Vatican chooses the new pope. Who could be the next pope? This article was written by Alfina Benny on May 1st. With the passing of Pope Francis, the Catholic Church is entering one of its most sacred and secretive traditions, choosing a new pope. This process, while deeply rooted in history, is still very much alive and filled with meaning today. Here's how it works. What happens when a pope dies? When a pope dies, a period called sede vacante begins. That's Latin for the seat being vacant. The Camerlengo, a senior Vatican official, is the one who officially confirms the pope's death. He also temporarily takes charge of the church's administration. The pope's private rooms are sealed, the Vatican begins 9 days of mourning, and preparations start for the funeral. After that, attention turns to the election of a new pope. How the new pope is chosen. Only cardinals under the age of 80 are allowed to vote. Right now, that includes 135 cardinals from countries all over the world. They gather in Rome and enter the Sistine Chapel for the conclave, where all voting takes place. Once they enter, they are completely cut off from the outside world. The voting is done in secret. Each cardinal writes the name of their chosen candidate on a piece of paper, folds it, and places it in a special container. To elect a new pope, a cardinal needs at least 2/3 of the vote, which means 90 out of 135 in this case. The cardinals vote up to 4 times each day. After each round, the ballots are burned. If no one is chosen, black smoke rises from the Sistine Chapel. When a pope is finally elected, white smoke is released to let the world know. Who could be chosen? There is no short list, but a few names keep coming up. Cardinal Matteo Zuppi from Italy is known for working on peace efforts and helping the poor. Cardinal Peter Turkson from Ghana is outspoken about the environment and economic justice. Cardinal Luis Antonio Tagle from the Philippines is close to Pope Francis's style and values. Cardinal Marc Ouellette from Canada is more traditional but respected worldwide. Cardinal Jean-Claude Hollerich from Luxembourg is a Jesuit like Francis and supports church reform. The cardinals could choose someone completely unexpected too. That's happened before. Remembering Pope Francis. Before he became pope in 2013, Jorge Mario Bergoglio was the Archbishop of Buenos Aires. He made history as the first pope from the Americas and the first Jesuit to hold the role. Francis stood out for his humility and focus on social issues. He lived simply, spoke directly, and often challenged the church to be more compassionate. He urged action on climate change, showed support for migrants and refugees, and called for a church that listens to its people. While his papacy wasn't without criticism, especially from traditional circles, he changed how many people see the role of the pope. What comes next? The Catholic Church now looks to the future. The new pope will face many of the same challenges Francis did, from church reform to global crises. The cardinals must now decide if they want to continue along Francis's path or move in a different direction. Until then, the world awaits, watching the chimney above the Sistine Chapel for that puff of white smoke that will signal the start of a new chapter. We've run out of time for today's episode of Teen Magazines. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm Jennifer Green, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Teen Magazines is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. We thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.